Okay, it's me to start today then. Welcome to the meeting of Audit Committee on the 19th of November 2024 with Tronwood Borough Council. This evening, the committee's chair and vice chair are attending the meeting online due to the weather and road conditions, and the committee are therefore required to appoint a chair from amongst its members who are attending in person. Could I ask the committee, are there any nominations for a chair for this meeting only?
Yes.
We have a proposer and a seconder.
Happy to second. Unless you seconded already.
Can we just confirm who it is? Sorry, Councillor Mooney.
Shall I move me tag?
Yes, please. So it's Councillor Lenny who's going to chair the meeting.
Thank you very much. Could bear with me because I've not done an audit chair before and it's quite scary. Please note that this meeting will be recorded and the recording made available on the Council's website following the meeting. Under the Openness of Local Government Bodies regulations, people may film or record this meeting and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not disrupt the business of the meeting. So that the meeting is not disturbed, could I ask everyone present to please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silent and ensure that your environment is distraction free. Please note that this meeting has a time limit of 2.5 hours. If the meeting is still ongoing at that point, then the committee can vote on whether to extend it by half an hour, but only to finish considering an item of business that has already been started. Welcome attendees online this evening. Can you hear what's going on?
Yeah, looks like we've got some.
Yes, we can hear.
Yep, everything's fine, thank you.
Okay. Just a reminder, those committee members attending online cannot take part in the decision making. We also have other attendees here tonight. Neil Whittle and Simon Jackson.
Can we just double check who's at the top, who's actually online? Because I don't think Councillor Popley's there yet. Let me just.
Is Councillor Popley online?
No, not yet.
Jane is. Is Lynn there?
No.
No, she's not online. We've got Andy Reid.
Andy Reid
from Mazeps.
Azola is the, are they Azets?
Azola, Tadula is Azets and Maritza, Mappy is Azets as well.
Yeah. And then we've got Nicola Ford and Kerry Beavis as well online.
Yeah.
Nicola and Kerry, all okay?
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Chair, I can hear you.
Right, the first item is apologies. Apologies have been received from Councillor Knight and Councillor Harpy-Davis as our substitute. And also apologies from Lynn Alderson. Welcome to Councillor Harpy-Davis.
Thank you, Chair.
Item 2 is the minutes of the previous meeting on the 22nd of October 2024. And I would also refer you, I don't know whether everyone's seen it, but Lynn Alderson had a meeting with the head of ICT, Eamon Khan, and Carey Summers, who's the director of customer experience, in September regarding questions she had following the exempt report in July's meeting, annual IT health check, code of connection. A copy of Lynn's notes were emailed out to the committee on Friday. They're not exempt. And Lynn's not available at the moment to give an update to the committee. Can we refer to her notes during the meeting? Or are we doing that now?
We've all had the notes, I guess.
Yeah, I've read them. Yeah. They're stuck on the back.
So, I think maybe if there's any questions on Lynn's note, maybe appropriate to address
them when she's back, but if we've got more, we can maybe just know that we've received them at the moment.
Yeah.
I think just as an aside, I think the mystery Steve, I think that might be me.
Well, I didn't know you're an IT expert as well.
I am when I'm called Steve.
Right, so can I ask each member, that's the ones in here though, isn't it, to confirm by a show of hands that they are content to receive and note the minutes?
Can I comment about them first, please?
Sure.
I've got a hand up.
Oh, sorry, I'm not looking.
That's okay, but it's got a yellow circle around it.
Yeah, I can see that.
So on page 8 of the pack, it mentions on part 25, the internal audit plan progress, we resolved that we would take the issues to Cabinet. I just want to update everybody that as the minutes haven't been approved by the papers needed both for the Cabinet for the November meeting, though the paper has gone, will be going to the December meeting, and I'll be attending that virtually.
Okay.
Is that's correct, Rebecca?
Yes, that's right.
So we've not got to do anything at this meeting about that then, that's just confirming that you're going to Cabinet and the report is.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions or queries? Okie dokie.
Chair, can I just, on something completely irrelevant, on Teams, Councillor Popley has messaged saying, "Hi everyone, I hope this can be picked up. I can't seem to log into the meeting on Teams for tonight. Is there a link that I can follow? Please to join."
I don't think there was one on
here. Shall I leave that in your capable hands then, Rebecca, for now?
Can you just give me a moment?
We just had an email pop up as well, probably saying exactly the same thing from him. Yeah.
Because I boss him about too much sometimes.
Do you?
Right, he should have had that now. So
lovely.
So can we proceed for now, pending Councillor Popley joining a little bit?
Yes, you can carry on.
We're quorum, so I think we're recording. I think it's fine to continue. Thanks, Chair.
So can I ask for a show of hands if you are content to receive the note and note the minutes and also the part that Jane has amended? Thank you. Right, item 3 is disclosures of pecuniary interests and other registrable and non-registrable interests. For information, disclosable pecuniary interests and registrable interests relate to entries that are included or should be included on a councillor's register of interests. Non-registrable interests relate to any other matters.
Anybody? Hi, Councillor Popley.
Hey. Well done.
Hi, everyone. I've emailed you to say I was trying to get in for the last 5 minutes, so sorry about that. I apologise.
That's all right.
Thank you.
What's this mean?
What's that?
Oh, yeah. So has anybody got any registerable or non-registerable or pecuniary interest to tell me about? No? That's it then. Did you get any sent off to you? Right, item 4, questions under other committee procedures 12.8. No questions have been submitted. Item 5, annual external audit completion report 2023 to 24. which is page 10 to 41 on the agenda. Could I please ask Andy Reid to present the report?
Yep, happy to do that, Chair. Evening, everyone. Yeah, just for information, I'm also joined on the call by Isola, who's the audit manager from Azets, and also Medinsa, who's the audit senior, who's joining more to observe the process this evening. So I just thought might be quite useful. She's been heavily involved in the audit, but she's never actually attended an audit committee, so I thought this might be a good chance to absorb the pleasure of attending an audit committee. Evening, everyone. Yeah, if I can really just pull out the key highlights from our completion report. It's quite a long document. There's a lot of information in here that we're required to report to you under auditing standards, but I just wanted to really highlight the key messages. So starting with the executive summary, which is on page 13 of your pack, page 4 of our report, I think the key message is that the audit is substantially complete. The key information that we're unfortunately still waiting for is assurances from the pension fund auditor, which committee members may remember this has been an issue in previous years. We can't actually complete the audit of Charnwood until we have assurances on the pension fund, which we need from Grant Thornton, who audits the Leicestershire County Council pension fund. We've not yet received those assurances. We are continuing to chase them. I don't think we've got a definitive timescale as to when we expect to receive them. I'm not sure. I don't know, Zola, can you remember when we were last promised these? I can't. We've been promised things at various points, but not received anything yet, unfortunately.
They promised us at the beginning of November, but we haven't had anything yet. And I did try to keep on chasing, but no responses yet.
Yeah. So they've now stopped responding to emails, unfortunately. I mean, I think members may remember. I think it was around March, April this year that those pension fund assurances were received from Mazars for the previous year's audit. We are still hopeful that it will be quite soon, and it won't drag on that long, but unfortunately that is the key outstanding bit of information that we're waiting for, which is outside of our hands, outside of the council's hands. But unfortunately that is the position. I think in terms of the rest of the audit work, so we do refer in our report to some information being outstanding, which is the annual governance statement, which is clearly on the agenda this evening, so we've now seen that. And then the revised expenditure and funding analysis, which I'll come on to, but we've now received that. I think that's the one part of the accounts that wasn't updated in the version that's been sent out for this committee, but it has now since been updated, so we're happy we've now received that. So essentially, the audit is complete, subject to receipt of those pension fund assurances. In terms of key findings, again, this is set out in the executive summary, but there's really three areas where we've amendments have been made to the draft accounts. The first one is in relation to pensions. Again, I mean, pensions seems to be a common issue most years from an audit point of view. There has been a material adjustment made to the draft accounts that relates to recognition of additional pension liabilities, both in terms of the 23-24 accounts and also a prior period adjustment, which impacts on to 22-23 accounts. This relates to a national issue that's been identified this year around accounting for liabilities for additional contributions, where councils are having to make additional contributions because of pension fund deficits, and this is assessed at every actuarial valuation. And I believe Charnwood is currently making additional contributions of something around £1.5 million per year to the pension fund because of previous deficits. Previously, there's never been a liability recognised for those additional payments. It's been identified this year that actually that is something that should have been recognised. To be fair, it's never been identified previously, and I think the CITFA code was actually previously stated that there wasn't a need to recognise these liabilities, but following various discussions between firms and auditors and actuaries and CITFA, I think the position's now been agreed that there is a need to recognise these liabilities. So that has been put through as an adjustment in this year's accounts, both in terms of the comparative figures and the figures for 23-24. The overall impact of this is an increase in the pension liability of £19 million compared to the draft accounts position. So it is quite a significant adjustment. Clearly, it has an impact on pensions and the pensions reserves, but it doesn't have any impact on the general fund position for the council. So, but that is quite a significant adjustment that's been put through. There is quite a lot of detail on our report on this. I understand it is quite a technical issue, so I'm happy to try and explain more of the detail behind this as to what's happened on that, but that is essentially the main adjustment that's been made in the draft accounts. The other two points that we've raised are more of disclosure points, really. So there's been a number of revisions to the financial instruments note, which is note 14. I think we'd identified that when we looked at the draft accounts, there were certain disclosures around the basis of valuation of financial instruments relating to level 3 financial instruments, which are those that are valued on a judgmental basis, and the council does have some of these in terms of the property funds. So the various disclosures that are required under the CIFA code that weren't currently included in the draft accounts. So that has now been updated. And the last point is the expenditure and funding analysis note, which is note 90 of the accounts. Again, when we reviewed this, I think the original EFA as presented didn't meet some of the disclosure requirements of the CIFA code, in that it didn't provide a clear link between figures as reported for internal management purposes and those included in the CIS in the accounts. So that has now been updated, although it wasn't updated in the version of the accounts that was sent out for the committee, but we've since seen an amended version that Neil has provided and are happy that that's now been addressed. So I think those second two points are very much disclosure points, and I think it's not unusual. I think as our first year as auditors, there are a number of areas of disclosures that we've looked at and maybe taken the view that in the past some disclosure requirements haven't been fully complied with. We've obviously discussed with the finance team of the council and agreed amendments around those areas, so we're happy that's all been addressed. So those are the key findings. As I say, subject to receipt of the pension assurances, we are happy that the accounts as updated and presented, we will be able to sign off with an unqualified opinion. I think the other key points I just wanted to draw to the committee's attention, on page 15 of the pack, which is page 6 of our report, we set out a table that we call quality indicators. This is where we'd usually use this to flag if we felt there are any significant issues with the quality of the council's accounts preparation processes or responses to the audit. You'll hopefully be able to see from there that it's all flagged as green, so I think that gives a very positive message in terms of the way that the audit's gone this year in our first year as auditors. We've had no significant issues and happy with the cooperation received from Neil and the finance team, so I'd like to thank the finance team for that. We will be obviously having discussions about areas where we can make the process more efficient, and I think understandably in our first year there's probably areas where both us as the auditors and the council's finance team maybe can develop our understanding and just build sort of a better working relationship, but overall I think we'd want to flag that we've had no significant issues with the audit process, so I think that's a very positive feedback in our first year. On value for money, so page 36 of our report, we don't provide much detail in here. We will produce a detailed auditor's annual report in due course shortly after signing off the accounts, but what we're required to do for the opinion is just conclude on whether there's any significant weaknesses around value for money, and we're happy and we're confirming here that there are no significant weaknesses that we've identified around the council's arrangements on financial stability, governance and improving economy efficiency effectiveness. We are considering whether we need to make some recommendations or make some reference around on governance. I think we discussed at previous meetings around progress of implementation of some internal audit recommendations, and I think that is something we probably need to refer to just in terms of the some potential issues around implementation of recommendations, but that wouldn't constitute a significant weakness. It's not something we have to formally refer to in our audit opinion. So that's the one issue I think that we may refer to. But overall, again, I think the fact is there's no significant issues on value for money is a good position to be in. There's many councils that have significant weaknesses under the current climate, unfortunately. And then the last point I just wanted to bring to your attention, on page 40 of our report, we talk about audit fees, where we have identified the need for some additional fees, which all relate to those three key issues on the accounts that we referred to, and particularly pensions. It's been quite a technical issue around the pension adjustments that have gone through this year. So we've had to assess the level of work needed around that, and we set out there what the proposed fees are. We have previously flagged this with Simon, the section 151 officer. We need to go through a process with PSAA of actually discussing and getting their approval for any additional fees, so we will do that, but we again just wanted to bring that to your attention. And those are the key messages, so I'm happy. I've kind of skimmed through the key headlines. It is quite a detailed report, but hopefully that pulls out the key messages for members, but I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Do any of the members of the committee have any questions they wish to ask? Jane?
Yep, I have a question.
You've gone...
And this, the pensions contribute. Is this... Can you hear me?
Yeah, you just went off for a moment, but we're back
okay
now. Yeah.
Yeah, I think my internet's a bit flickery. About the pension issues, Andy, that you've mentioned, is this... How many local authorities is this issue impacting upon? Do you know? Is it for the local authorities?
I would expect that certainly all of the admitted bodies in Leicestershire will have the same issue, because it's the issue across the is specific to Leicester's pension fund. Most of our clients in other areas have got similar issues as well, I think. I think most of the bodies that will actually have their 23-24 accounts signed off, 23-24 accounts signed off, are likely to have this kind of adjustment in them. The issue, I think, as we previously discussed, though, that there are an awful lot of bodies that aren't going to have audit opinions on their 23-24 accounts because of the audit backstop, and they're likely to get their accounts disclaimed. So I'm not sure whether this issue would be addressed in those accounts, because the auditors are potentially not actually doing audit work on pension figures. But I'd expect that pretty much every local authority that's getting their accounts signed off will have an issue on pensions this year, because any body where the pension fund has previously been in deficit, so was making additional contributions, will be impacted by this, which I think is most admitted bodies, to be honest.
Okay, thank you. I think that would probably give a bit more reassurance to the audit committee members as well, to know that it was a widespread issue.
Yeah. This is a national issue, as I say. There may be some bodies that aren't making additional contributions, but my understanding is most local government pension schemes were in deficit at the last triennial date, which was 2022, so most admitted bodies have been asked to make additional contributions. So wherever they are doing so, there's this need to recognise an additional liability.
Thank you. I do have another question as well.
Go on.
Obviously about the increase in fees because of this, the extra work that's needed. Obviously we raised at the start how much the fees have gone up by, and then obviously this on top of it. Will we be able to get any additional funding for that from central government, for example, because this pensions issue in particular is a national thing?
I'm not aware of the funding arrangements myself. I mean, I know previously additional funding has been provided to local authorities because of increases in audit fees. I think when the scale fees themselves were increased, so there was some funding provided for that. I'm not aware that there'd be any additional funding for this specific pensions issue, and I don't know whether Simon or Neil have any information on that, but that's not something that I've got any knowledge of, unfortunately.
Thank you.
We've had no communication that we're going to get any additional funding.
No, I didn't think you would have. Can I ask a question? I think if I'm right, because I'm popping and out of financy bits in this and some other committees. Weren't we told that the pension scheme deficit wasn't very great for Leicestershire County Council?
Our deficit has been reducing, so it's reduced very, very significantly, but it still exists. But the issue that Andy describes relates to previous years where we did make those payments.
Right.
So okay. Yes, there is still a deficit.
So we're doing a catch-up.
We are potentially in a year or two, we may see that the pension fund is in surplus, but that can depend on things like bond yields, etc. So global financial shocks could take it back the other way.
But are we effectively doing a catch-up payment then?
We have been doing, this is what the actuary does, a periodic revaluation, which then sets what our employer contribution needs to be. So over the time, we've had a deficit, and our contribution is designed to catch up that deficit over a period of years. But external things like, you know, bond prices, wars, etc., that can sort of flex the pace of catch up positively or negatively. So the rate of catch up in the last couple of years has been more significant, but that's in principle how it works with a revaluation, and our employer contribution is set so that any deficit we would catch up. Maybe in future there will be a surplus and the contributions will be flexed accordingly, but we've never been in that luxury position as long as I've been here.
Sounds like
just to add briefly on that, the next triennial valuation, Simon refers to, is 2025, so it's quite soon now that the next one will happen, and that's the point at which the need for any the need to either continue paying additional contributions or stop paying them, whatever, will be assessed at that point.
Yeah.
So it's not that far off, they'll be reassessed.
Yeah. Okay. I just thought it were a bit of a stinker, to be honest, but there you go, that's just me. Any more questions?
There's Councillor Popley, I think, Chair.
Oh, Councillor Popley.
Thank you, Chair. Just a very quick question again on the same topic, Andy, and sorry to go over old ground. Jane Nellis's point about, the assurance thing. Something you said earlier on about, you're still waiting to hear from them and they've sort of started to ignore your emails. On page, where are we? Just let me get it up again. It's on page 14 of your report, page 23 of the pack. Okay. What sort of comeback have you got if you carry on ignoring your pleas to be polite? What can we as a council and as an audit committee particularly say to the rest of our council colleagues that things are being done? Because obviously this is a big elephant in the room, and obviously Councillor Rennie's already alluded to that as well. And I know you're doing the best you can, but you can't go ignore it for forever. So what assurance can you give us that, what's the next step if they don't come back to you? Thank you.
Yeah, well, the auditors, there is a protocol in place that was set up, I think, back in the Audit Commission days, and is now, I think, monitored by PSAA and the National Audit Office, that does require pension fund auditors to give us these assurances. The trouble is there's nothing in there that specifies a timescale that they have to do it within. And their view, as a pension fund auditor, they will say that they can only give those assurances once they're happy that they've completed all the work they need to do on asset valuations at the pension fund end. And that tends to be the issue that delays this, in that the auditors will say we've not yet completed work on valuation of pension assets, which to be fair can be quite a difficult area from a point of view. Pension funds hold a lot of hard to value investments, valuations can be a significant issue around those. But that's generally the reason why there are delays. It is frustrating, as Ola says, we were originally promised these assurances at the start of November and we've not had them, and we've had no update on timescales as to when we might receive them. But I know, I've worked as a pension fund auditor in the past, that their response will be, we'll provide the assurances once they're happy we've completed all the required audit work on asset valuations, essentially, and I'm sure that's what they're currently doing. Unfortunately, there's no... They are obliged, they're required to give these assurances, so I'm sure we will get them. It's just a time scale. There's nothing we really can do to mandate them to do it within a particular time scale, because they need to complete the work as pension fund auditors before they can do it.
Thank you, Andy. That's clarified the point. Great, thank you.
Any more questions? I've got another one. Will the pension fund auditors have to have their audit done by the next valuation?
Yes, so the expectation is that they complete their audit probably in the next few months, so that will be well before the next triennial valuation happens. When the triennial valuation happens in 2025, the pension fund auditors will do specific work around that and provide assurances to us on how that process has gone as well. So that is covered as part of the assurance arrangements.
So presumably we just hang on until they're doing their report anyway.
Yeah, that'll be covered. I think the 2025 valuation probably won't actually impact the accounts until 2025-26, I think. So it's a couple of years off before the results of that will feed through.
But the report will be sometime in the first half of next year, will it?
We will get assurances from the pension fund that we need for this year's audit. I think I'm expecting really the next couple of months.
Yeah.
And the latest we can sign off these accounts is February next year because of national backstop arrangements. We will get the assurances before then, I'm sure.
What I'm leading up to is, would we be best just not to chase them at all, because we know they're not going to produce it, and wait until the next triennial revaluation for the next cycle of audit.
Yeah, we need the assurances for this year anyway. We will need a new set of assurances when the next triennial evaluation happens.
Okay.
But we will still need them to be able to sign off this year before the triennial happens.
Right. Thank you very much.
Okay, can I just ask what happens if they haven't delivered these by the time of the backstop in February?
I'd be very surprised if we get into this position, because all of the firms are very aware of the need to complete 23-24 audits ahead of the backstop date. Essentially, if we are in that position that we've not been provided with the assurances by the pension fund auditor by the end of February, we'll be required to issue an audit opinion either way by the end of February. So if we've not had those assurances, we'd end up effectively having to qualify the accounts on the basis that we've not got assurances on pension fund. But I'd be amazed if we get to that position. And I think if we did, there'd be an awful lot of fallout for the pension fund auditors that they've put. Because it wouldn't just be us affected, it'd be every ever admitted body in Leicestershire would be in the same position if that was the case.
Thank you.
So I'd be very surprised if we got into that situation, but in theory that is what could happen.
Thank you. Any more questions? Right. I'd like to ask the committee if we can note the report using a show of hands.
Thank you.
The next item is item 6, annual governance statement and review of the Code of Corporate Governance, page 42 to 54. Can I ask Simon Jackson, our Director of Finance, Governance and Contracts, to present the report?
So, this is a... Thank you, Chair. The Annual Governance Statement, or AGS, is a standard part of the overall statements of accounts, and it's, as it says here on page 44, it is good practice to consider it separately to the account. So, essentially, it is a document which sets out all of our control and governance processes that sort of give a background to the overall controlling environment in which we produce the accounts and the financial statements. So it's overall a background document setting out the environment in which we prepare these documents. As page 44 says, there's a guidance on the document that's been around since 2016. And allegedly it should hopefully provide a meaningful but brief communication regarding the review of government. The format of this is pretty similar. The format of the actual document is similar to what we've produced in previous years. Obviously we do try and update it for new and different things that are happening. So that's all set out from page 46 onwards. So those of you who've seen it before will no doubt find some of it familiar. I know the Chair's got a couple of queries on a couple of paragraphs which may require amendment, but obviously happy to take any questions from any members.
Do any members have any questions?
Jane.
Thank you. Couple of questions. First of all, I guess, last year when we looked at the AGS and the year before, it was noted in the minutes that track changes would be used, so we didn't have to go through the full thing, but again that hasn't happened. So I had to sit down with the door, I went, sat down with the document side by side, which was a stress, I guess. So it'd be really good if these documents we could include the track changes in future, please. Secondly, on paragraph 9, which is on page 50 of the pack, refer to the of 2022-23. Within that, it did contain significant internal control issues, so it would be good to tie those two up. It was the one relating, which you signed off this year, Andy, is okay, to the disclosure of related party transactions, so I think that probably needs referring to. And paragraph 22, it doesn't match the action from the previous. It doesn't really follow from what it says there. In the previous year, says that the action plan was the Office of Task and Finish Group relating to the IT Trent system. So the iTrent system issues will continue to meet to identify and resolve any ongoing concerns. This will include commissioning a health check of the system by an external specialist consultant and addressing any recommendations which may be made. And I think that should be, that wording should be included within the progress to clarify.
Got anything that you want to?
Well, certainly the latter one doesn't refer to iTrend. So as a casual reader, that's just a. An error, and
that's just a fair.
So it does refer to iTrent. We have actually spent a lot of time on iTrent. We have had external consultants involved in terms of us getting the sort of cut over to the new version of iTrent correct. So basically, we've done the action, but it just needs the wording needs to be reflecting, and we can amend the. Paragraph 19 to reflect significant what the previous auditors described as significant, so we can reflect that in the paragraph. That's not a big issue. Personally, I'm not super convinced it was a major control issue, but I'm happy to amend paragraph 19.
Are you happy with that, Jane? And is there
I'm happy with that too.
Okay. Councillor Popley.
Thank you, Chair. Just two things. One, to support what James has said, I remember the discussion about the track changes. It definitely was agreed last year. So I think, like James said, I think it'd be very helpful if we had something to compare it to. Because just it will save all of us a lot of time going forward. And the second thing, I'm sorry, it's really annoying for you all to have to do. But now James highlighted paragraph 22, there's a duplication on there as well. There's two paragraph 22s, so that could be amended as well. I'm just thinking it's got to be done for correctness. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Popley. Any other questions? All right. I'm going to ask the committee if they approve the annual governance statement with amendments requested by the committee. For the 2023-24 period for signing, and can you please let me have a show of hands? Thank you. Right, the next item is item 7, which is statement of accounts 2023-24, which are on page 55-137 of your agenda pack. And I'd like to ask Neil Whittle, Head of Finance, to present the report.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so, I did make some notes, but I think Andy's got the same script as me, because they're very similar. So, I'll condense mine down slightly. So, it's the annual statement of accounts for 2023-24, so it's our financial position as at 31st of March. I haven't received any councillor questions in advance of the meeting, so hopefully all is okay. The only other thing I'd add is to kind of build on what Andy said is 2023-24 was a change of auditor for us. I think overall it was a positive outcome. We've learned a lot of lessons, positive lessons, so it was quite good having different auditors, etc. So it's been a good effort all round, and the effort of the finance team, as Andy said, they really worked really hard in what was a challenging time for us. So there's the statement of accounts. Over to the rest of you.
Thank you very much. Have any of the members of the committee any questions they wish to ask?
Yes, please, Chair.
Councillor Harper-Davies.
Thank you. Page 67, under debt provision, is it an easy task to actually predict debt, the amount that we have to set aside for debt?
No. So, I mean, the provision is essentially, there's various ways you can do it, but essentially it's a decision about whether someone's going to pay or not. So sometimes it's relatively easy, in fairness. So if it's a business and it's gone into administration, we know that they're not going to pay their business rate. So we know that sort of thing. If it's a customer, though, we don't know whether the customer's going to pay and just hasn't got the money, but it's going to pay us later, or just admin, it's just not that well organised, it's going to pay us later, or in fact they're not. Sometimes there's a dispute where they say, you know, we say you've had something, they say we haven't. So there's various reasons, but you know, we take a sort of view in the round, and we come up with revision at some point after a period of time when they've not paid. We will then potentially choose to write off the money and then take it out, so the debt's removed, rather than under with a provisions situation. The debt exists in our books, but we've got an offsetting amount to suggest they won't pay some of it or all of it.
Thanks, Simon. Thank you.
Thank you. Jane.
Thank you. I've got a couple of questions. On page 58, Neil, it says an increase in surplus assets of 0.1 million. Is that incorrect? Should it be 0.7? Is there just a typo there in your report?
And what makes you think it's 0.7?
Can you explain where the... Well, it's on page 10 on the PPE. On the notes, sorry, of the PPE.
Shall we check it, Jane? It's fine.
Yeah, that's probably the easiest thing. So on the notes for surplus assets, it doesn't match. So it's 103 and 33 for surplus assets. I think that just needs checking against the notes to the accounts. But, I mean, that's part of your report to us rather than anything in the accounts. Okay. And also, within the account, on page 66, which is page 5 of the account, where Azette had asked for some of the changes for IFRIC 14, and you've got some words crossed out primarily due to an actuarial gain. I think that needs removing rather than just crossing out. I presume that you left that in so we could see the changes.
I would guess so, yes. But yes, it should be removed.
Yeah. And then also, just a quick comment, I guess, on capital expenditure. The carry forward last year was 9.755 last year. So if this year we've got an underspend of 18.7, which seems to be worsening, and maybe it's something that just needs, you know, previously the underspends were happening because of COVID issues and contracts being pushed back and things like that, but it doesn't seem to be actually getting any better as time goes on.
Sorry, which page did you pick that comment from? Sorry,
that's on page 6 or page 67. At the very top, in paragraph 6.
That's page 7. Oh,
sorry. 67? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
page
67.
Or page
6,
if you...
No, 6. It's at the top.
At the top. Yeah, okay, looking at wrong 67, isn't it?
I'm just saying 18.7.
Yes. I thought she said 6 or 7.
Sorry, I think my connection's a bit
in and out.
That's probably a question I'll have to go away and ask the capital accountant to see your working paper. This house has got to those figures.
I think it's just something that as an audit committee, we probably need to keep a watching brief over to see it kind of put in a comment like that. I think that's quite a significant issue, really, as to what's happening, really.
Yeah.
Okay, if I can add a brief comment back to that. I think this was something actually when we were doing the value for money assessment, we'd picked up on this as well. My understanding is that budget included quite large allocations which were for things like investment spending, which were almost contingent parts of the budget, maybe about 10 million or so was included, which is there, I think, when we discussed it, Simon. It's there kind of if on in the event that an opportunity arose for which investment would be appropriate, it's in the budget, but there's probably an expectation that wouldn't always be used. So I think that is maybe part of the budget figures. It includes things like that, which you wouldn't necessarily expect to be spent every year anyway. So that maybe distorts it slightly, but I think take your point, Jane, that it's still quite a large underspend.
Yeah, that is the case. So that's correct, Andy. So there's a couple of things in there. So when we're doing the management reporting, so the capital plan amendment reports, we've now divide up the capital plan into three areas, which are the live schemes where you would expect us to deliver against those schemes in the capital plan, provisional schemes, which Andy correctly identifies includes 10 million, which are for opportunistic spend or things that may arise, but as Andy said, there's not necessarily an expectation that expenditure would occur. So there's a £5 million pot of money for regeneration should a key site within one of the town centres become available. But obviously we only spend that should that opportunity arise. Then there's also an amount similar for forward funding within the enterprise zone, which does require one of our enterprise zone sites to come forward with a forward funding suggestion, so how we might invest in that site. But that's up to them. The third element of our capital plan is third party schemes, which are essentially some, not all, but some of our section 106 allocations, particularly to parishes, have to go to our capital plan. So when we look at our capital plan, it's those live schemes we're wishing to say, yes, we're committed to deliver those. And if we don't, that's the problem area. Provisional and the third party schemes, we've separated those out so that they may or may not get delivered, and that does create a bit of a distortion. I think at the end of this year, there was those schemes Andy described. There was also some contractor issues within the HRA, which I think probably accounts for another big slug of it. So it is actually, delivery of the capital plan is something that we have been looking at. There's more detail of this within the capital plan amendment reports and that narrative within there, and some of the capital monitoring reports that are going to go forward, and hopefully if you were to read those you would see some of that analysis in a little bit more detail than we've presented here, which is obviously a very brief one line summary within what is already a large document.
Is that okay for you, Jane? Is it something you feel we should include in audit meetings?
To be absolute, it gets a lot of attention in finance performance already, so I think in fairness it does get quite an air. All the capital, all those management and monitoring reports do go to finance and performance scrutiny committee, so they do get the whole capital plan and progress, and as well as the revenue monitoring, does get quite a large airing in that forum.
So
I think it's not about kind of when it making something extra come to us, but I think it's just something that we need to think about when we get any reports covering this sort of area, that we need to be mindful of it.
Right. Is that all right?
Yeah. That's fine. I found the page for the first query I had. So the increase in surplus assets on page 88 or 27 of the financial statements. So the net book value at the 31st of March 23 for surplus assets was 33, and the net book value for the 31st of March 24 was 103.
Again, I'd need to see the working papers to have tied it together, so yeah, that's fine.
Okay, that's fine, but yeah. Thank you.
Would it be prudent to suggest that that be one of the amendments that would be included?
It's not an amendment to the financial statements required. It was just a note on the minutes. So it was the report that was goes with the minutes for the audit committee. All right.
So that's your job, isn't it, Rebecca? Any more questions? Councillor Half-David.
Thank you. It's not really a question, Chair. It's a comment. But as a member, it's reassuring on page 68, as noted above, the Council's adequate level of reserves for the next 3 years, and there is confidence in the Council can continue to provide service in a financially sustainable way. So as a member, I think that's really reassuring.
Yeah.
I think just on that note, Jane, actually, I've just had a look at it. So it's surplus assets. So it's 103,000. Minus 33,000, the difference being 70,000. So if you round 70,000 up to the nearest 0.1 of a million, it's 0.1
of
a million.
Sorry, that's me.
It took me 5 minutes looking at it.
Yeah.
Right, so shall I scratch all that then?
Well, we've I think we've concluded that the note is probably correct. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Councillor Popley.
Just really quickly again, just more of a comment slash question. Point 11 on page 79 about heritage assets, and then point 17, paragraph 17 on page 18. Just out of interest, who's buying our plant and our heritage property? Who's not specifically stated? I'd just be interested to know who's doing it. Are we having an independent valuation done? And if so, can we state who that person is? Because I know it sounds a small thing, but that's still our asset. I know we have a commercial property under Justin, obviously, there's work behind the scenes there, but it'd be just good to know who's actually valuing our assets and things like that. It's not explicitly stated. It's just like, it'd be nice to know who's doing these valuations. Just so, again, so we can report back to people and say, oh, it's this company, it's this company. If it's an independent body, we'd just like to know who's doing it. And then, again, Andy and his team have another name to sort of latch onto as well. I'm just thinking transparency, really, for people in the public domain. Otherwise, it's all cloak and dagger, isn't it? And it's like, who's done this? So, just a little observation. That could be possibly done. I appreciate it.
I don't know for certain, but I doubt very much whether it's the same organisation. So things like mayoral jewellery, if I want to use that term, I think that's valued at about 150,000. So I think that's done for insurance purposes. So that's probably a different person to who values the Carillon Tower.
That's fine.
I think we might end up with rather than one person, or practically there might be a long list, so I don't know.
Dreams. Yeah. If it was possible to even give a couple of people, I just think with the way the world's going now, people like to know, don't they, transparency and everything, and something like that, the Carillon, the museum, these are our assets, and they'd like to know where we're getting these valuations from. I'm just thinking of transparency, really, and if it's in black and white, then at least we can say we've fact-checked it. I just think a very generalised statement otherwise at the minute, and it's like, how do we come to these figures? Sorry if I'm overthinking this, Andy, you can chip in.
No, that's fine. I'll just make a comment. I mean, in terms of the actual requirement to revalue assets, so the council's main property estate is revalued every year by Wilts Head and Eve, and I think that is disclosed in the accounts that they're the professional valuers that cover property, plant, equipment and the housing stock. For heritage assets, there's not actually a formal requirement to get a full valuation done of heritage assets every year. I think the value in the accounts hasn't changed. So I think my understanding is that they probably haven't been formally revalued, and because of the value involved, 279,000, there isn't a requirement to have those assets revalued every year. As you say though, Councillor, I'm not sure when the last valuation would have been done. Obviously this is our first year as auditors, so I think that is probably something that's worth looking at about whether there needs to be an up-to-date valuation done. And another point that is done, I'd expect that would need to be disclosed in the accounts, but I think it's probably the case they probably haven't been formally revalued because of the relatively low value. Mm.
Thank you, everyone.
So, Neil, does that sort of tally with?
Yeah, the council's main valuation firm is Wilkes Head Eve. The heritage assets, I'd have to ask the question, because it talks here about insurance valuation, but yeah. I'd like to assume it without asking it. We use a system, it's the CITFA asset manager system, so that's where the data is stored, and that will talk about kind of things like depreciation, last time it was valued, etc., what have you, what not. So I'd have to go away and investigate, otherwise I'd be speculating.
So, on that level, yeah, of detail. Okay then. Is that okay for you, Councillor Popley? Well done. Right. Is there any more questions? Right. Can I ask the committee if they approve the annual governance? Sorry. lost me thread. Do you approve the statement of accounts for the year ending 31st of March 2024, attached at Appendix A to the report, and for me to be authorised to sign the accounts on behalf of the Audit Committee?
So,
or will it be me or will it be the Audit Chair?
I think just logistically, Chair, and I think it would. I think you may be off the hook. You may be off the hook. So I think the chair's got to be called Jane, actually, it's in the constitution. But other than that, I think Councillor Jane Nellis will sign this. So there's some logistics we've got to go through. So I think we probably have a talk through it. We have a resolution as we've had. Have done in previous years.
So to be clear, then it will be the chair, the normal chair of the committee.
I think where we've got to is there's one or two potential amendments to the statement of accounts to reflect the adjustments that we've spoken about. So potentially, if the committee would agree that the committee agrees to sign off the accounts subject to the final completion of the audit and any amendments to disclosures that are required. If that could be delegated to maybe Jane and myself, who then will sign the accounts. So right. I think certainly if Jane's not happy with, I think it's hugely unlikely with this wholesale change to the accounts and it looks something very, very different to what you've seen. I think we'll.
I won't sign it.
She won't sign it.
Hopefully these are
technical adjustments. So at that point, we'll sign off the financial statements.
Yeah.
And also in here, there's a letter of representation which I will need to sign for the auditors to say, you know, I've disclosed, you know, I'm not aware of any frauds, etc., etc. So there's a pro forma in there.
So it's like a debrief.
I've not hiding any information from the auditors. It's a fairly standard thing, but I'll need to do that. I think
if we look back at the minutes for last year, we had a phrasing within the minutes to say that it had been accepted
subject to
and they would be signed at a later date. So I think maybe if we look back at that wording that we had and use that.
So I'm asking the committee then if they approve the statement of accounts for the year ending 31st of March 2024 and for Jane Nellis to be authorised to sign the accounts on behalf of the Audit Committee.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Subject to any adjustments that may be identified by the external auditors as they finalise their work and in consultation with the Section 151 officer and to be notified to other members of the committee. Has that covered it?
That sounds good.
Good, yeah.
We used that last year.
If you agree, please raise your Okay, then. Ooh, I've got something else here. Is this the
management representation?
It's the lecturer representation. Yes,
that's
right. Is that the next part of the agenda?
I think it's just part of the piece we've just been looking at, actually, but yeah. It is, if you're interested, have a look at it. It's actually generally a pretty standard set of wording year on year. This is an example, but I think
this is your letter to assets.
Sorry?
Is it your letter to
assets? It's my letter to assets saying, explaining, you know, I fulfilled my responsibilities as Section 151 officer, I've complied with the statute. As far as I'm concerned, they're free of material misstatements, including omissions, etc., etc. So, I acknowledge my responsibility, so to design. So basically, I'm accepting that if they're all wrong, it's me that goes to prison, etc. But that sort of thing gets signed at the point where the accounts are signed. So,
right.
So hopefully, as Andy said, it'd be extraordinarily professionally embarrassing if Grant Thornton don't complete the pension full audit, but hopefully we'll be in a position to do this maybe in the next couple of months, before Christmas if we're lucky, maybe, probably January, I'll guess. So there's obviously...
Very optimistic.
they would be extraordinarily embarrassed if they're not able to provide the assurance by, certainly by the day. Hopefully they won't do it 2 days before the backstop deadline, in which case that's making it all very exciting logistically for us.
Right, so can I ask the committee to approve the appendix, which is the letter of representation for signature by the Chief Financial Officer, subject to any amendments agreed. Can I have a show of hands?
May I just ask, why point six is in red?
Why is point six in red?
Please.
Is this in the letter of representation?
Yeah.
Second side, yeah.
I can't see that.
Right, very top.
I think if I can comment, actually, I think we provided the wording, as Simon says, we provide suggested wording, it is standard wording. I think that was just a glitch in the template, to be honest. apologies for that. I think that was just in there. I think there was previously wording in red that we tailored appropriately, but it looks like it didn't remove the red on the start of the sentence for some reason. But yeah, that's what it was.
That's Microsoft Office for you.
I've coloured it in on mine now. Right, so is that okay with... Are you willing to accept the report?
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I need to see your hands again. Thank you. Should we go on now to the meeting notes of the follow-on IT questions? Have I missed the boat?
Have we got the...
I think it was just...
Random person.
Next to my... Yeah, that's it.
I had a note that she's going to be back at the next meeting.
Are we to just leave it until the next meeting, then?
It would be more sensible if she's not here.
I can't make out my sense of this.
You need to draw lines across and squiggles everywhere.
I have to understand that I'm Steve as a starting point, but I think it would be much more appropriate if Lynn's here to explain.
Yeah.
I mean, I was there, but a lot of it was quite technical in context, so probably best if Lynn's able to explain.
Should we bring it to the next meeting? Would that be
I think that's probably, I feel that appropriate, bring it along maybe alongside the next set of minutes.
Okay.
And bring it along then, yeah.
Right. Is that all right with everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll discuss the IT questions at the next meeting of the Audit Committee. Are there any issues raised during this meeting that the committee wishes to forward to Scrutiny Commission to consider? Councillor Harper-David.
Thank you, Councillor Lenny. In the report regarding the members' register of interest, I think there was a significant amount of members which their forms weren't up to date in the assets report. And I know it's going back on the meeting, but I think it's really important to endorse to all members. Because the DEM services always send out every 6 months a reminder to make sure a register of interest is correct. And in the report, there were some significant issues with some of the members' interest forms. And I think somebody needs to go out to all members to make sure their members' interest forms are appropriately up to date.
So up to date and
as in every 6 months, because the audit Andy picked up.
When you say issues, do you mean actually with the content?
Yes, with the content. With the content, because if you look at the in the report, in the assets report, and it says that there was a number of specific serious issues that people were not addressed or declarations weren't made on their forms. So I think
that was last year's. I just followed up on a recommendation from last year.
Apologies if that wasn't clear, but that was a recommendation that was made by Mazars in the previous year, and we've followed up on it as we're required to do and confirmed that there weren't any similar issues this year. So I think that is actually a historic issue that's now been addressed.
That's a relief. Thank you, Andy. Thank you.
All right. So shall we scratch that?
I think apologies if that wasn't as clear as it could have been, but that's...
I was very alarmed when I read that. That's all. That's why I will bring it to attention of our group anyway, because I think, as for all of us, it's really, really critical that those members' registers of interest are updated.
Yeah. So shall we hold back on putting that to the scrutiny committee?
Yeah. And, it's just as a general point, it's always best to do as dem services.
Not being pedantic, but it's really important for...
No, it is. It particularly around land holding and planning applications in particular is really, really important to make sure the disclosure.
But for now, it's just in abeyance.
I think it arose last year because of the changing councillors through the elections and some of them no longer being members of the council. And I think that's where some of the issues arose.
Yeah, that's right.
Thanks, Jane. Thank you.
Thanks for
clarification.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Before you all go, can I say thank you for chairing on my behalf? And I'm sorry I couldn't get there because of the snow.
It seemed like a good idea because I've got the same name as you.
Confusing at times.
And actually, just at the end, I thank Andy and Azola and Linsa just for the first year. Hopefully, it wasn't too traumatic for them, but thanks for their efforts, and also to Neil and the team, because there's hours and hours of work in terms of the preparation and the audit here. So
it's extremely thorough.
This is the pinnacle or the end game of a lot of work that's gone into this, so everyone's put a lot of effort in, and hopefully we've got a good result.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks very much. I echo the same thanks to Neil and the team and Simon for all the cooperation we've had. It's as I said, I think it's been a positive first year for us, but we will be doing a debrief just to learn any lessons we can to make the process more efficient going forward. So thanks very much.
Andy. Right. Andy. Unless there's any more comments, I'm going to declare the meeting closed.
Thank you,
Jane. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you both, James. Well done, James.